Welcome to The Shared Desk, episode 56. Not 56, 56. Because I know how to enunciate.
And this is a new thing with you. You're gonna talk over
the theme
even when I've got it dipped in and we're all good, right?
I am.
Hey, Nobilis, how are these levels? How you doing? It's The Shared Desk, episode 56. I am your host, T. Morris.
I drink and I know things.
Yes, I do.
Well, one of those is correct.
And how about you?
I'm Pip Ballantyne.
What the shit? That's the coolest name ever.
It is. It's the coolest name
ever. Thank you, Deadpool.
Ever. Yeah,
thank
there we
you.
Go. I got some new drop-ins. Yay.
Oh, great. I love that.
Yep.
Crap. I don't think we've gotten to the hard part yet.
No, you haven't gotten to the hard part yet, but that's okay. So, we've just finished celebrating Mother's Day. Pip is just raring to go on this podcast.
Yeah, I'm like, come on. Game of Thrones is on in half an hour.
And then Penny
Tower
Dreadful.
Of Joy.
Wow, I'm just going to have to keep adjusting those levels for you, darling.
I am. I'm excited.
Yes, I can tell. I can tell.
I love a good tower.
Yeah, there we go.
Yep.
All right, so yes, we have Game of Thrones. So what have we been working on this week?
You mean writing-wise?
Yeah. Writing-wise, project-wise, anything.
Everything.
Let's be honest. It's all been about the Ministry of Peculiar Occurrences. As many of you know, for those of you who are listening who invested in the Kickstarter, we are in the final bits. We are in the final bits.
It is the spit and polish.
Yep.
I think I edited part 21 today, so we're closing in on 2/3 done of the audiobook.
Yeah. And,
so that's good.
And I'm still recording my bits, and while I'm recording bits, I'm also proofing the final copy.
It's a great way to do it.
Right? I don't think we're good. I think we're
but it
getting
is a good
there.
Way to do it because we actually say you should read your stuff aloud, and
this
is a great way to do it combined with an audiobook.
It's been absolutely fantastic. I'm happy with the way I sound, but you're the one editing me, so
I'm just sick of your voice.
Well, there you go.
I mean, I love your voice. I love your voice.
But
after like 12 hours of listening to it, and then you hear you cough, and then tell the cats what to do, and then I come in, it's just like, oh, come on, people.
You're done.
I'm done with us. Yeah. I'm done with us, man. I'm sick of us.
Great. Happy Mother's Day, everybody.
Happy Mother's Day. But so when that's done, we can
tweak up
the print book, and yeah. The focus has got to be the print book because that's got the longest run in.
I mean,
we could finish the ebook and have it out tomorrow.
Pretty much.
And the audiobook
which
is.
We're not.
No, which we're not.
Which we're not. No.
Calm thyself.
Yeah. Bloody.
Yeah. Honey.
Don't you think you should rephrase that?
I think we should, just to
but
make
sure. But I'm saying
sure.
you could, you know, crank the rest of it out, tidy it up in a day or two. Whereas the print book, you've got to wait for it to print, and then a proof, and then
proof,
you look at it, and then you've got to print it all again, and then you've got to sign them and ship them, and you know.
I can't stress this enough.
But I love the print book.
I know.
It's gorgeous.
And the print book looks gorgeous. It's going to look...
You just want to rub up against it. It's so pretty.
Thanks,
Darla.
I will afterwards. But what I will say about that is it's important because I thought I had our book laid out, looking good. And when we got to the proof part, I went and looked at it and said, there's a problem here.
There's a little problem.
There's a massive tweak here. It's going to be simple to do, but we got to do it now before we actually go to press.
We want it to look good before we
send
it out.
We do.
And honestly, if we have to say, well, we're getting it a week later, we give it a week later because I'd rather have it a week later
and write
than get it out too early and have it wrong because I don't want to disappoint people that back the Kickstarter.
Exactly. So for
but
all our investors.
Hopefully that's not going to happen. We're on track and it's just, you know, crunch month.
And we
writers know about crunch months. It just happens.
This is part of the lifestyle.
It doesn't matter whether you're independent published or New York published, there's always a crunch month.
And for those of you who invested.
I need a drink.
Yes. For those of you who invested in the Ghost Rebellion, for those of you who want to order the Ghost Rebellion, yes, it's coming. And we want to make sure it's right.
You're welcome. Shut up.
So, please.
The backers will be getting it first, and then it will be next month. It'll be available to the general public.
So, even though it feels like we just posted a shared desk, the previous shared desk about Vegas was late, but we did get it out there.
Hey, we got it out there.
And, we're still remaining consistent on our posting.
And this is not bad for Crunch Month.
For Crunch Month, we're doing all right. So, what brings us back to the Manx this time is a quaint little article that we came across on April 26th on virtualwayfarer.com. I've never been to this website before, but this came up in my feed and it came up in Pip's feed. We both reposted it, and I found it a pretty telling article. The headline reads, "Your friends support you, but they still won't consume your content." This is written by Alex Berger. And I'll go ahead and read a few bits of...
The pertinent bits.
Yeah. "As a content creator, this is something that will frustrate you, leave you feeling concerned that you're not good enough or that I don't respect you. You'll probably feel a bit betrayed and you'll feel a bit hurt. I know these are all still emotions I feel regularly as a fellow content creator, but the reality is, it doesn't make me a bad friend, and it most definitely doesn't mean your content isn't good enough. As a content creator, this was a hard lesson that has taken me a long time to come to grips with, and even longer to internalize. It doesn't matter what type of content you create. Perhaps you're a journalist, a photographer, a musician, or a book author. One of the more difficult things to come to terms with, and something that leads many creatives to abandon their projects while feeling a deep sense of hurt, is the reality that the audience you expect to be the most passionate and automatic, that of friends, family, and colleagues, will, more often than not, disappoint you."
Mm-hmm.
The article goes on. It's a pretty healthy article,
but it basically says that you cannot rely on friends and family to consume your content, whatever
right.
that content may be.
I mean, some of the highlights is the reasons why your friends may not consume your content.
Mm-hmm.
We have set interests. That's one. We're busy.
Everybody's busy these days.
Yeah. This is a pretty good one. "Content creators are horrible consumers." I like that one a lot. "We think we know you already." That goes back to branding, which is something we might touch on here. "We want special treatment." That section was a little iffy about that. "We don't give positive feedback." Nobilis. I'm kidding, Nobilis. I'm kidding. So let's give the quick backstory on that. Nobilis sent us voicemail for this episode, and it was critiquing our last episode.
And saying the audio levels were too low.
Yeah. And
okay, we fixed that.
We fixed that because it turns out that the output that we were dealing with
was a little
lower.
We have cats that run across things.
And there was also an issue of output on my end. So it was this time I can't blame the cats. I'm going to blame...
Yourself.
Blame myself. We're not your ideal audience.
That's true.
That's a very good one.
Keep
creating is the end advice, followed by a quick thank you. This is a pretty healthy-sized article, but... here's the truth of it is... No,
I have seen people that have got very disappointed that they're not getting the level of support that they expected from
yes.
their online contacts.
Yeah.
We can look at several times when podcast authors had reasonable expectation that because people are buying their content, listening to their content for free online, that they will automatically go and buy the book.
Yeah. And that, I think, is...
Is that sort of the same, similar sort of thing?
Yeah, and it's also a tricky platform to build upon.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that you have these many downloads, ergo you have these many listeners, ergo they will run out and buy our stuff, this also ties back to a previous show we did where we talked about giving it away for free.
Mm-hmm.
And that also has had its ebbs and flows in blog posts and things like that. Why I won't give my work away for free, pay the author. Even Will Wheaton dealt with that when Huffington Post said we'd love to run your article. We can't pay you, but we'll rerun the article.
You can have exposure. You can die
and
from that.
One of the arguments against that whole thing with Wheaton and HuffPo was that he had posted it on another blog and he had posted it for free there, and people were saying, well, you're kind of having a double standard here, et cetera, et cetera.
I thought this article was very well written and went into something that people really haven't talked about a lot.
Or openly about it. And the last time I talked about it, I was with another author, and all three of us. I think I'm okay with talking about that. It was Piper. It was Peach. I was talking with Peach, and I said to her, "Do you get the impression that authors are rarely cross-promoting themselves as they once used to.
Mm-hmm.
Because Peege and I and you were all on the internet around the time where if one person promoted, said, hey, I've got a book coming out, all of a sudden everybody was mm-hmm. helping push that and boost that signal. I don't see that as much as I used to.
No. I think I have a suspicion that behind the scenes there are organized groups of...
Yeah. Street authors. Teams.
Yeah, street teams. I mean, that's romance writers are very good at that, at organizing street teams of people, which is a good... I mean, and some of those people could be your friends. But one, you don't add them to that group yourself.
Right.
These are people who are self-selecting. They're like, I am your friend and I want to help you. And or they could just be regular fans who are like, I just
really
want to...
Really passionate fans.
I don't know you personally, but I love your work, so I want to be involved and help.
I think that's also a very fine line, the line between fan and friend. Mm-hmm. I think we have some fans who are friends, and then we have some friends who may or may not be fans.
Mm-hmm.
And
I've
never had this expectation that every... Now, granted, I believe, yeah, that... If social media was as big as the douchebags like to brag about and say, oh, yeah, you got these great connections and you'll be able to do this and you'll be able to do that. Really, out of all the connections we have in Facebook, in Twitter, in Instagram, I don't think all of them react and get the word out the way the douchebags kind of mull it out.
Well,
that
there's
this
a lot of,
I mean,
obviously when...
And I'm okay with that.
When Twitter and Facebook and that started out, there was a lot more, there was less noise.
There was less noise,
I feel like it used to be a lot more about the sharing sort of aspect of things. But I don't think you can, I mean, like we talked about with the giving it away for free episode, I don't think you can expect your friends to buy you because... You don't necessarily, they might not like steampunk. They might not like fantasy.
Right.
Doesn't mean they don't like you.
Yeah.
But they're not, I mean, everybody has to make a decision to lay down their hard-earned dollars for something.
Right.
And some friends might say, oh, you know, I don't like steampunk, but I'll buy T.M. Pip's book because I like them.
And
but some people, but you can't expect that.
And you know, I would rather not have that sale.
Yeah.
I would rather not have that sale.
You want them to enjoy it.
I want them to enjoy it, and I want them to know that the book is going to a good home.
Yeah.
And if they're buying it as a gift for somebody, by all means, absolutely.
We've had people do that.
Yeah, sure. But I remember I was promoting this. Now this is pre social media. This is back in the day when I was promoting Moravi.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember going to my first Barnes & Noble in Richmond. And it was an utter disaster. It was one of those things where they planned for me to be there at the same time as Teacher Appreciation Weekend. That meant that all teachers could walk in and they automatically got like a 40% discount on the books.
Jeez.
The thing was is that they were buying books not necessarily for their classes, but for themselves.
Uh-huh.
And that was where the line got a little blurry. And then I'm sitting there promoting Moravi. And I remember this one teacher came up to me and he's sitting there and he was actually wearing a t-shirt that said, I love books. It was one of those I love books t-shirts that was handmade, homemade, and Oprah's name was somehow worked in there. And he proceeded to tell me about the story of how he wore this shirt and it got him on Oprah. And he's standing there and he has got a stack of 20 books. And my relatives are there. Not just my parents. My cousins are there. My aunt and uncle are there. And they're watching this all unfold as this person with a pile of 20 books. And he's glancing at my book and he's talking to me and he's telling me how Crash Out Awesome and his homemade shirt is. And then he goes, well, it was a pleasure talking to you. And he walks away.
Yeah.
And I hear my cousins behind me say, do we know anybody that wants this book? Do we know anybody? Have we bought this for this person? Did we buy it for this person? And that's when I turned around to them and said, don't.
Yeah.
Don't. I'd rather not have the sell. Because even if you are, you know, even if
they
friends,
feel sorry for you.
They feel it's a pity buy. It's a pity buy.
Yeah, no one likes a pity buy.
No,
or a pity shag.
But yeah.
I had to go there, sorry.
You did. You had to go there. Oh, dear. You want the sell to be legit. And you also want to reach a new audience if all you're doing is having friends buy your stuff, having family buy your stuff.
There's limits to that.
It's a bubble. It's yeah. not. It's not.
It's like when you go to a writers group and you just sell to the writers.
Yeah, yeah. That's that the second. Awful, that's the second it? Most depressing situation you can get into, because nothing is worse than being at a signing where you're surrounded by authors. No one's buying your books
except the other authors.
Except the other authors,
because they're pity buying.
Yeah,
let's all pity buy each other's books,
and we'll feel better.
It's a pity circle jerk.
No, it's not going to make you feel better. And
you want to play me?
What? That was a misfire. Sorry about that.
That's what he said.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, jeez. Wow.
Inappropriate.
Wow. Okay. I was going to edit that out, but forget it. I'll leave that in there. Yeah. I mean, and what this author says is true. I mean, we have friends that write science fiction and fantasy, but they're not necessarily going to read steampunk.
Yeah.
We have friends that are other authors that are into romance, but they're not going to write they're not going to read steampunk.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm okay with that. And that
I can see for many authors starting out and they're trying to get traction and trying to get people to notice their book.
Yeah.
And they might not have that many followers on Facebook, so they're relying on their close-knit group of people that are on Facebook with them,
right,
rather than a wider audience, that they could feel disappointed if they're not getting reach or they're not getting retweets
and
or reposts or purchases or anything.
And
that can be a little disheartening.
Yeah, there was
but those
a point.
Aren't really, that's not really your audience,
no.
is it? Your friends and family aren't really your,
it's the
shouldn't
people,
be your audience.
It's the people in the circles outside of mm-hmm. you and your friend that I think you're trying to reach.
Yeah.
And I think I was, at one time, yeah, I was a little disappointed. I was coming to grips with it, just like this article was talking about. When the Janus Affair came out, and we put out the trailer for the Janus Affair, we got tons of shares, I remember.
Yeah.
I was watching it on Facebook. I mean, all folks from everywhere were sharing that trailer, and I was so proud. We released the trailer for The Diamond Conspiracy, barely a blip on the radar.
Yeah, and that was a good trailer too.
Now, I think some things had changed, though. And this is where I think I had to stop and take a step back and go, okay, this network that I've built, this platform that I've built, should I rely on every one of these people to run out and buy my book? No. But I should appreciate the people who are stepping up and saying, hey, this book just came out. You're going to want to get it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the thing I find myself doing is that I'm not necessarily going to be reading all of my friends' books because they're writing in genres that I'm not really interested in or whatever. I try and support the ones that I am interested in. But what I do try and do is if someone's got a book release coming out, I say, hey, here's this new book from this person.
Right.
So instead of purchasing the book, I am at least trying to help disseminate the word that it's out there.
I mean, it's the same thing with, and also the reason why you can't read everybody's books is going back to here, we're busy. I mean, right now we're in crunch time.
Everybody's busy. I mean, not just.
I tried that in 2002 when I first got on the scene. I tried to buy books of authors that I really respected and really made an impression on me. And there are books that are still sitting there that I bought, that I got autographed, that are from friends of mine that I haven't touched because I'm busy working on the next podcast.
Well, that's the thing. When you're a content creator, that necessitates that you have less time to consume content.
Right, exactly.
So you're too busy creating to consume. I mean, you've got a commute now, so you at least have podcasts to listen to. I don't have any time to listen to podcasts
because
I'm at home, you know, wrestling with ebook formatting or pinning things for our boards or tumbling or whatever.
And this goes back to the whole thing with we're horrible consumers.
Yeah.
I mean, we make time to do, like this weekend, we made time to go see Civil War.
But you have to make a conscious decision to carve out that time. And you can't carve it out for everything.
No, I mean a good example. We were talking about this on Geektitude.
Mm-hmm.
On Geektitude, this was the podcast. You can find the following in the show notes, but it was Geektitude Show 29. Pip and I were talking about steampunk,
mm-hmm.
and one of the questions we got was where do we feel that our Geektitude is weak?
Yeah.
And you mentioned video games. You mentioned that was one of the passions I have, and I do have it. But my copy of Mass Effect for Xbox 360 is still in its shrink wrap.
I know. And we've got we've got lots of DVDs and shrink wrap.
We've got DVDs and shrink wrap. Yeah. We've got...
One day they might be worth something.
Yeah, maybe. Mint in box. But it drives me nuts that we don't have that time. And now I will say this. This thing about... this one thing is we don't give positive feedback in the article. I would take exception to that. I love giving people positive feedback. Uh-huh. If I can't find anything positive at all,
then you don't say anything.
I say nothing. Yeah. I say nothing.
Well, that's better.
Yeah. because you don't want to be that guy.
No.
You don't want to be,
no. And no. I might not be able to support my friends, but I also don't want to kick them in the nuts when they're down.
Exactly. And I don't believe that friends should just automatically give positive feedback. I think it should give constructive feedback. That was what Nobilis did. Nobilis gave us constructive feedback.
Get your levels up.
And he was absolutely level up. And that was exactly what we did. So, I mean, it is hard being a content creator and it's
and
hard,
a consumer at the
and
same
a
time.
Consumer at the same time. It's
I think it's a really good article, actually.
No, it's a fantastic
article.
I think everybody should read it before publishing their first book.
Yes.
Because I have seen it where people go, well, I'm planning to sell it to this person, sell my book to this person, and I'm like, okay.
You got to get outside the bubble.
You got to get outside of that bubble straight away.
Somehow.
And you cannot rely on friends and family to build your audience.
Unless you've got 500,000 friends and family.
And the other thing too is I think this goes back to this particular article also touches lightly on the whole thing about statistics. Mm-hmm. People get really wrapped up in statistics with
I know a certain Thomas Dean Williford who admitted publicly on Facebook that he checks his book every day, his rankings.
Yeah.
When did you last check any of our rankings on Amazon?
I think the last time I checked my rankings.
I check them when they come out, when the book comes out.
When they come out, it's usually weekly and sometimes daily.
probably for the first week, it's every day.
Yeah, but Thomas's book is a little different because
it's evergreen
material. I mean, he can put that book out, and it's at least 5 years old, but he can still put it out there because it's not dated with technology. It's not necessarily dated with what's going on. Mm-hmm. Whereas you pull up Podcasting for Dummies, the second edition, and the biggest breakthrough I'm talking about there, wait for it, the H2.
Ooh, woo-hoo. Now they're up to the 6 now.
They're up to the H6N.
N.
Yeah, so, so there's that. But the thing is that when you're creating content, if you're creating it for family and friends, that's one thing. But when you're trying to go mass market or you're trying to get your content out there, I really think that
you got to cast your net a little wider.
The net does have to go wider. The net does have to go wider because it's not sustainable to rely on the inner circles. And instead of looking,
you're gonna rely on the kindness of strangers,
right? Exactly. that was a spoiler from Civil War. wrong Civil War. But the other thing too, I think, is the attitude you take when you promote something online, whether it's from your author page or whether it's from your personal account on Facebook or on Twitter or elsewhere. If you don't get a lot of retweets, okay. Sometimes it'll strike. Sometimes it won't. And it took me a while to understand that because I thought, well, people were really pushing the Janus Affair trailer. Why aren't they pushing the Diamond Conspiracy trailer? Well, let's be honest. Facebook has changed a lot.
Yeah, there's a lot more
the
noise.
The algorithms have been
yes. Oh yeah, on Facebook. Yeah, on Twitter it's the noise effect of just too many people following too many other people, but on Facebook they've deliberately done it as an algorithm shift.
So, you know, but when people do promote it, when people do share your work, you know, retweet you, repost something via Instagram, I think that's something you should appreciate. And that's also showing that, whether you have consciously made your platform a place for a street team or not, you've got people that do believe in your work.
Yes.
I just don't think you should expect them to be the rabid fans that will keep you going.
No.
Yeah, exactly. Seriously?
Seriously.
Well, this is one for the books. Okay, so, not Pip. I got this email, and I forwarded it to Pip. And Okay. So I got this email from a very, I don't want to say prestigious, let's just say popular, from a very popular event that takes place in the south of, in the south of the United States.
The southern states.
In the southern states. And it's a very popular event. It is not a Comic-Con. I'm just going to get that out there now. It is not a Comic-Con. But
it's big.
It's big. They get writers, they get media stars, they get
mostly media,
cosplayers, and they contacted me, as in us, to see if we would be interested in being guests.
Oh, that sounds cool.
That sounds great. Wait, there's more. So then we get into the meat and potatoes, where this event is happening 1 month from the time that they contact me.
Okay.
Then they say,
hey, they're going to fly us down and pay all our expenses?
Haven't found out, because after they've contacted me to see if I was interested in being a guest, they then said once I replied with my resume, then they would evaluate my status as a guest.
So why did they bother? Couldn't they have just dug around and seen if you
were? Hang on, honey.
No, that's too sensible.
We're getting there. So then, we get to the point where I say, I appreciate this, but since you've waited until a month before your event, we've already been booked for the month of May. So thanks a lot. Keep us in mind for 2017. Within 30 minutes, we get a reply. And in this reply, they say, okay, that's awesome. How about you guys promote us this year, too? We would love to know if there's any way you could find out, like, would people in your audience, would they be interested in working with us and helping promote the event? That would be swell.
Yeah, the fun bit was, who it was from,
yeah,
was a publicity agent.
A PR agency. And I want to just share this little moment because this was the first thing that popped into my head.
Blast from the past.
Okay, yeah, it's a blast from the past. How many people can sing along with this? What a Whiskey Tango Foxtrot moment. Now, if you weren't a listener of my earlier podcast, this was the point where I would go up to somebody and say,
who's the slimy little communist twinkle toe down here who just signed his own death warrant?
And I can't do that because that would be considered rude.
Oh, look at
that. I found the clip.
Oh, young T. Morris. So young and so...
Young and so naive. Wow.
I wouldn't say innocent. Yeah, naive.
Okay. First off... Yeah, no, not naive. So first off, A, contacting writers 1 month before an event.
Do not do that.
Wow. Okay. Okay, I guess it's because we're writers.
I would say 4 months is the absolute... Minimum.
Because
we don't like to do, I don't like to be away from home to do multiple events in a month.
One
a month is it.
Yeah, one a month I think is a good cap.
Yeah.
I mean, if we didn't have Boom, and if we weren't, and even if we weren't in a crunch phase, I mean,
you still need time to write.
So yeah, for some reason though, writers don't do much. So
they're just kicking around.
We'll go ahead and we'll contact this Yahoo, and you know, he's got a month. Well, you know, we'll throw him a bone. So, which brings us to the next thing. So it's a PR agency that's contacting me, and then they say, you know, tell us about yourself, and then we'll evaluate whether or not you should be a guest.
Hold on, when you contacting me?
Yeah.
Shouldn't you have already done your research about who I am and decided whether I am a good fit with your convention? Why do you need me to do extra work because your lazy ass can't be bothered going into Google?
Pretty much that is what a PR agency is supposed to do. It's supposed
This is run by a 12-year-old. I'm sorry, no, 12-year-olds would be smarter than this.
Yeah, I mean, let's be honest right
now. Just do your research, you numbnut.
Jeez.
Hip rage.
Bite my sweet ass. Right.
Wow. Well, okay then.
It's the height of rudeness for say, you go and fill in our forms and we'll decide. You're the one that contacted me.
Exactly. You're the one that contacted me. Whenever...
If you contact me and say, hey, we want you to come to our convention, I'm making the bold assumption that you know who I am and what I do.
Exactly.
It's not too much to ask.
No. Okay. So yeah, we're
needless to say, we are creeping, not leaping up on our
no. We're creeping even further into this because yeah, so you contact me with a month to go. So you're telling me, okay, yeah, we want you to come to our event, but we have no idea who you are.
Was he just randomly, authors?
Authors. Yeah, that's,
So we're good, right?
No, we're not. We're not.
We're not good.
We're not good at all. This is not happening.
Well,
okay.
Obviously, these people at this convention hired a publicity agency that doesn't know
on
anything.
The cheap. They must have
probably.
Hired these folks on the cheap.
Probably walking in a strip mall out of the back of a van.
So
stealing bandwidth from the local supermarket. That's kind of how I imagined this publicity agency was doing this.
Bite my sweet ass.
Indeed. That's exactly what I was about to say.
Yeah.
So convention organizers, we love you. We would love to work with you, but please
invest in a good PR agency.
If you're not going to do it yourself,
that will take just that little extra step.
Five minutes, and do
a quick Google search on who they are approaching for a guest. And that, again, now if I had approached them, that's
a different
one
story.
Thing. That's a different story entirely. They're coming to me the month before their event. Which brings us to number three. Hey guys, if you can't make it this year, could you promote our event?
Wow.
Have you noticed?
You have just, shivved me in the back. And as I'm lying bleeding on the floor, you lean down and leer into my face. Could you help promote my event?
Yeah.
While you're bleeding out?
There's a great article by
I am not your doorway.
Yep. Chuck Wendig, everybody. We'll have it in the show notes. Yeah, we are not your doorway.
Yeah. For one thing, I don't even know you from like a bar of soap. And now you're expecting me to put in my feed your advertising.
Let's talk
for free.
Let's talk all about your
event. I
would
send that person a bill.
And as you notice, we haven't dropped the name of the event.
No.
So we're going to leave it at that. We're taking the higher road.
Even though sometimes we don't want to.
No, even though we don't want to. It was tempting. It was very tempting, but no. We will just say it's in the southern part of the United States.
And
it's a big event.
Of which I'm presuming writers are the bottom feeders.
Yeah, I mean, and that's
they're being treated as the bottom feeders, which happens in conventions with this size,
and
they're BEA or
yeah, exactly. Unless they're big time. Yeah, I mean, we get it. Okay, you got your cosplayers, you've got your media stars, and you got some bands,
and you got some slots to fill.
You know, we only got a month until the event. I know. We'll get writers because they've got plenty of time.
Well, if you're going to do that, and I think it's ridiculous anyway, but at least go for local authors.
Yeah.
Don't just randomly inquire of people who are five or six states away.
Yeah, and unless you're ready to fly them in and give them a hotel room, I would suggest not contacting them, which is why you should think local, because if you're on a budget and you're looking for cheap, local authors are always a good
yeah,
a good
they're probably
plan.
Like, it's just some time. I'll go in and do it. Whatever.
I'll do an afternoon signing. Bing, bang, boom.
Oh, it could have been
done.
Worse. They could have asked you to pay for a table.
Yeah. Yeah.
That could have been the ultimate, like,
I'm sure that was in the agenda. Okay. Glad we got that out of our system.
Whew.
One more.
Three simple words.
It's not spam.
Hey, pardon me for interrupting.
Got mail.
We have?
We do. We may not have voicemail, but we do have actual like
paper.
Email. Yeah, I know.
You printed it off.
Well, we need the points. So we actually got a comment on Facebook, and we also got an email from last time. So
okay,
let's
fire away. What do you got?
From Michael Spence.
Hello, Michael.
Michael Spence. Been listening to the Shared Desk, Vegas. Yeah, the one with the cool title. That was While My Guitar Gently Leaks. about that query letter presentation, is it available and for how much? You see, I haven't needed to write a query letter in years, but it's time now, and I'm wondering what's changed in the intervening time.
Hmm.
Well, okay, because it was Michael, I went on ahead and answered this offline, but I'm going to go on ahead and open it up to the both of us. So really what has changed between then and now? Email.
Yeah.
Now we have, I mean, between the time that, Moravi was published, mm-hmm. not even when I was pitching it, when it was published, and now more people are asking for
don't
email
Don't you still
submissions.
Have a file somewhere of all the rejections? And
my darling, not only do I have the file of rejection letters, not only do I have the original portfolio.
Oh,
not,
my gosh.
Yeah, I sent out a portfolio.
Oh, that's right. It had a CD.
It had an audio CD in it. It was... It was slicker than snot on a doorknob.
And how many replies did you get to that slick thing?
Quite a few.
You did?
Quite a few.
Okay.
Some people, one or two people said I overdid it. Quite a few of the agents and editors said, this is the best presentation I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them gave me feedback on the presentation itself. I mean, on the actual packet. One of them published it. And mm-hmm. it was Gwen Gates, Dragon Moon Press.
So, okay.
And so.
But yeah, but even since then, you wouldn't. I mean, those poor,
I would not go that
poor
far
people
again.
Getting
no.
print. You
no.
know.
Because now, when you think about it, because of email, I remember a time when Gwen told me, and this is again before people started obsecting.
Back in my day.
I want to say this was actually in 2005.
That is 10 years ago.
Well over a decade ago. Gwen was telling me that, and this was Dragon Moon Press when you came on. She was getting 200 submissions a week.
Yeah, and I mean that's a small press out of Canada. So
and, yeah,
a
small press.
Can
out
you
of
imagine
Canada.
What the other people, you know, like New York, are dealing with?
And then consider on top of that, they're doing e-submissions.
Mm-hmm.
So now you could easily add two, maybe even three zeros, or not three zeros, but you can easily add another zero or two
mm-hmm.
after that 200 a week. Because now everybody, if you've got email, you've got the ability to make a mm-hmm. to make a submission. So the question is, what about the form itself? What has changed? Well, that formality of having the address at the top and having the subject header and then having your the date, that's pretty much gone because all that stuff is now time stamped in the email itself.
Yeah, I mean, your mm-hmm. subject header is the subject of the email.
Yeah.
So you just need to get the name of the person right, know who you're addressing.
Yeah.
I mean, that hasn't changed.
That hasn't changed.
You just need to include, you know, the word count,
right.
The name of the book, just the basic information.
Yeah.
They're not going to read, like, you know, my mother thinks this is great
right.
and my, you know.
The rules of actually writing the cover letter still
apply. The same.
They still apply.
Keep it professional. Keep it short and sweet.
Yeah. Brevity is the soul of wit.
Yes.
And always, and always at the end, not just put your name, but underneath your name, I suggest underneath your name, put the best phone number for them to reach you,
mm-hmm.
be it an editor or an agent.
Because if they call you, that's good news.
That's very good news.
But also, I mean, we on our emails, we also have a very pretty footer.
We do have a
which
pretty
footer.
Which has
all
yes.
our contact information
right.
and some samples and stuff.
And things like
so
that.
So I don't think, I mean, the content of the query
right.
has remained the same.
But the other thing, too,
but the tweaking of the formatting and,
yeah.
and the delivery method are different.
And but always check the submission guidelines.
Oh, yes.
Check the submission guidelines.
Make sure that if they say Times New Roman 12-point, that's what you give it to them
and
in.
Even with the email. But, yeah. I mean, if they want...
Do not stray.
Do not stray
from
the submission guidelines.
Gifts. Just keep it simple, plain, pertinent, you know.
That works. Okay, this is from Brian Weber. Hello, Brian. We got this. I've been wanting to ask this for a while, actually, but I've been reluctant for a large number of reasons I won't go into. Okay, well, he still asks thusly.
Fire away. I'm excited now.
Recently, I've been releasing some serialized fiction, 4 parts total, 2 of which are finished.
Uh-huh.
The good news is, by a wide margin, the most well-received fiction I have ever written. The bad news, it's fanfic.
Mm-hmm.
This has me wondering for the past few months, really, if I should consider just going whole hog because it's a full-time writing. I mean, obviously, you can't make money off of fan fiction. Tell that to E.L. James. fan fiction writer. I know a few people who seem to be quite happy and have done well for themselves in terms of making friends and building a good reputation with fanfic. Should I just go for it? All right.
So is he's asking whether he should keep doing fanfic.
He's asking, I think he's asking, yeah, should he just go on ahead and just do fanfic?
Well, I would say, what is your goal?
Yeah.
Are you, if this is making you happy, doing fanfic, making friends, being part of a community, then that's what you should do.
Yeah.
If you want to have aspirations for like published stuff, your own stuff, then fanfic is possibly not the best way to go. I mean, I think fanfic is great for learning the craft of writing and getting feedback and building your ability to write. But obviously you're not going to be able to publish that yourself No. or do anything like that. So I think it's, I mean, everybody who writes, writes not necessarily for the same reason. Not everybody wants to be published. Some people just want to enjoy the art of writing and Right. sharing it.
Right.
And community. So think about what your goal is. Do you want to be published?
And the other thing too about fanfic, as both Cassandra Clare mm-hmm. and E.L. James have proven,
mm-hmm.
if you file off the serial numbers, you've got yourself. I mean, I
would never recommend that though.
Well, yes and no. Yes and no. One of the things that you can, because filing off the serial numbers, I don't think is as hard as people make it out to be. I mean, what you have to do. Because most fanfic goes in directions that the approved property will never, not or yeah, does not do go anyway. Into. Case in point, I did fanfic, and even Nobilis called it. He when I was telling the guys in my Destiny circle about this, I said, "Yeah, I'm doing a Destiny short story, a short story set in Destiny for this anthology that we're giving away."
Yes, so and making Nobilis no just, money off it.
No, I'm not making a cent off of it. And Nobilis went, "Oh, it's fanfic," and at one point I was like. Thanks. But then I stopped and said, he is absolutely right. It is mm-hmm. fanfic. And I'm more than okay with it being
well,
fanfic.
Well, see the difference. I mean, there's fanfic and then there's tie-in work. The only difference is you're getting paid for tie-in
exactly.
work.
Exactly. And the thing about this this Destiny short story that I wrote for RT, I had a blast writing it. Mm-hmm. I had an absolute blast writing it. Would this, how hard would it be for me to file the serial numbers off this and take it even further and maybe mm-hmm. make it into a full, not that hard.
No.
Not that hard. I would have to remove a few characters. I'd have to change the names of a few subclasses. I'd have to maybe tweak the names of the weapons. Apart from that, the story is solid.
Yeah.
And so if your end goal is to write for fun, by all means, have at. Mm-hmm. Go for it. Have a good time with fanfic. But if you want to go that next step...
Yeah.
And then, and you know, just, you know, ascend.
Welcome to level 7.
Level 7.
Yeah.
Sorry, that corner was really dark and I couldn't help myself. I think there's a bulb out.
Yeah, the electricity is faulty in level 7, but you get the idea. Is that.
Well, I think the thing with fanfic is, though, there is an inbuilt community who right. is interested. If you're writing in Harry Potter, there's a group of people who are already hungry. For fanfic,
they want
Harry
more
Potter.
Story. They want more
so
story.
So if that's what you wanted, if you want to build an audience that way, you know,
but
it's worked for a number of
yeah.
people.
I mean, when it comes to fanfic, no, I don't have a problem with it. I mean, I know that there are people that take their fanfic in one direction and it goes into a very weird direction. The whole Kirk on Spock action. Hey, if that's your boat, if that's your jam. Then awesome. But I've also seen it where people have taken fanfic into an entirely different direction. And now you've got CBS Paramount leaning on some of these fan-driven projects.
What about Kindle Worlds?
And Kindle Worlds, yeah.
I mean, that's basically licensed fanfic.
It's licensed fan fiction. And okay. I mean, there's nothing
I mean,
wrong
you could,
with that.
Yeah. I mean, if
absolutely.
That's a venue, actually, if you want to sort of bridge the gap between fan fiction and getting paid.
So yeah, Brian, if you want to take a look at what is the conditions and
what worlds are open
in Kindle Worlds, by all means, go for it. I did the experience. Delilah S. Dawson did the experience with me. It was it was hella fun,
mm-hmm.
and it can actually open up doors in other directions.
Mm-hmm. But I absolutely think first you should decide what your goal is, what you enjoy, what you're getting out of it. Did we sound sensible then?
I hope we did. But as people are finding out now, yes, we actually get, you know, we get
give us questions.
Yeah. If you send us a question on Facebook, you send us a question on any of the platforms that we're on, by all means, if you're okay with us bringing them on the show, we'd be more than happy to talk about it. We also got voicemail, which is 703-791-1701. This email came to t@tmorris.com. And you can
but
also
it could
send
go
one to
pip@pjballantine.com.
That's right.
Either or.
Either or. And We're actually going to be going away this weekend when this drops. We're actually going to be heading this weekend.
Fleeing to New Jersey.
Fleeing to Piscataway, New Jersey. As
the
guests
Steampunk
of
World's Fair.
Steampunk World's Fair. And we're really looking forward to it. This is the first time we've been since the Janus Affair, so
yeah.
It's been a few years.
And you've already met K.W. Jeter, the guy who invented the term steampunk.
I've never met K.W.
Haven't you met K.W.?
No. We got name dropped by K.W. Jeter. Remember, it was many moons ago.
That's right. He gave us the book. He gave us the award.
He picked up our award, but even before then, at a panel somewhere, he said, "I wouldn't mind it if Pip Ballantyne and Team Morris got hit by a bus."
Oh, thanks, K.W.
So we'll be able to call
dinner with
that.
You and discuss that particular point. But yeah, we're going to be there, and we're doing well, we're doing two readings, actually. One of them we're previewing The Ghost Rebellion, which is on Saturday. We are also doing a reading where we're going to do extracts from the series so far.
Oh, great. Okay, looking forward to that. That's gonna be
I just dropped that on you.
Yeah, you did.
Because we were asked what we were doing, and I was like, well, Saturday we're doing The Ghost Rebellion. So on Friday, let's talk a little bit about what came before. Just catch some people up. Do a few things.
Pull our favorite scenes. But yeah, for anyone who is going to the Steampunk World's Fair, we're planning to have handouts. Samples.
A little sample chapter.
Little samples of sample chapters from The Ghost Rebellion. Your first peek at book 5 in the Ministry series. We're very excited about it. After that, I believe then is Motor City SteamCon, and that is in July. Yes. You'll be able to see that, and then of course we've got over the summer the steampunk museum that is in Hershey Park, PA.
So I think we're supposed to be going up there and talking about.
We're going to be going up there sometime in the summer.
Our books are up there; they're going to be in a museum.
Yep.
Just as long as they don't put us in a museum.
We're gonna be in a museum, a Smithsonian endorsed museum.
But we're going to have to say that there is one sad thing in May. We're not going to be at Balticon.
I'm sorry about that, everybody.
We got excited.
We got very excited. We thought
we could manage a day escape.
And
then we were like, maybe a day and a night escape. And then
it was getting bigger and bigger and then smaller and smaller. And then finally we looked at where we are in the production.
Yeah.
And we looked at how we really want to get this right. And we said, let's sit out Balticon entirely. And it's
heartbreaking.
It's heartbreaking. But again, as we mentioned in the previous show, when Doc called in that voicemail, which was 703-701-1701, we have to make a tough call. Mm-hmm. And that tough call is
adulting
can't do
sucks.
Adulting absolutely
on the plus
bites.
Side, Scribe said she might pop in on the way back and forth.
So there you go. So
little things, but you know, we'll be at BoulderCon again.
Little blessing.
So you guys sort out the wrinkles.
Yeah.
And it being at the new location, and we'll turn up next year.
That's the plan. So thanks everybody for listening. Just remember, folks, the Share Desk is a non-commercial, no derivative, share alike 3.0 United States license, and it's protected by Creative Commons. You can find out more about that about creativecommons.org. Did that make any sense whatsoever?
Blah, 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 blah. I don't know.
I was getting a little tongue-tied. I'm getting it out right now. I'm just going to get it out of my system. So, hey, we're going to be back in about 2 weeks. We will be back in about 2 weeks.
Yeah, commit.
Because we are going to stay on this schedule for as long as we effing can.
If we can stay on it this month, we can stay on it any month.
Exactly. So until next time, enjoy the ride.
I'll catch you later. Now let's go watch The Tower of Joy.